Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Well, they're back by popular demand, Sam Sifton and Melissa Clark of the New York Times food section, and just in time for Thanksgiving. Here to talk turkey and everything that goes with it, the sides, the pies, the oh my's, grandma's favorite recipe, new traditions, the hits and the misses. This hour On Point, we're cooking with Sam Sifton and Melissa Clark. You can join us on air or online. What are your questions for Sam Sifton and Melissa Clark about cooking Thanksgiving dinner? Have you shopped? At least made a list? What is on it? Join us at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York, Sam Sifton and Melissa Clark. Sam is food editor of the New York Times and the founding editor of the New York Times Cooking Newsletter, which is the publication's most subscribed to newsletter. He's the columnist for the New York Times Magazine and an author of the book Thanksgiving, How to Cook It Well. Sam, welcome back. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
And Melissa Clark, staff reporter for the New York Times food section and author of the column A Good Appetite. She's also the author of, get ready for it, 39 cookbooks. Her latest is Dinner in an Instant and features instant pot recipes. Melissa, welcome back to you as well.
It's great to be here.
Listeners, you can also find recipes from Sam and Melissa's 400-degree Thanksgiving, which they cooked in one day, at our website, onpointradio.org. So tell us about this one-day Thanksgiving. Sam and Melissa, you cooked it in one day, 9 dishes, 8 hours. I guess testing the theory, you can make a whole meal, one stove, one day, one oven, set at 400. Is that right?
That's correct. Okay. That's correct. The 400 is I think, the most important number. After all, most Americans cook Thanksgiving in one day.
Yeah.
Only the most intrepid of us do a lot of advanced preparation. So we thought, you know, we'll be like most people and we can do it in a day. But how can we make it painless? And we struck upon this notion that setting the oven to 400 and then just forgetting it for the rest of the day would be the best way to do that.
I think part of the stress of Thanksgiving is timing. You know, that's one of the biggest areas of questions that we get. You know, how do I get the timing right? And worrying about, you know, lowering the oven and raising the oven temperature for the dressing and for the sweet potatoes. By eliminating that one huge stress, it makes it so much easier to just get through your day.
So tell me about the timing. What's most important to know then?
Well, you want to have a plan. You do want to be able to just execute the plan on the day. And that does take a little advanced planning. You want to think, let's say, the night before, these are the things that I'm going to cook. And you can kind of build it all around how long you think, roughly, the turkey is going to take. So in our case, we figured we were going to eat around 4. And we thought if we got that turkey in 11:30 noon, we'd be great. And that gave us the whole morning to make side dishes and desserts and the like that we could just foil up and keep on the side and then warm up in an instant after, well, in 15 minutes after we'd cooked the turkey.
So your 400-degree Thanksgiving recipes were amazing. Roast turkey with orange and sage, chorizo dressing with leeks, apple ginger snap crumble, sweet potato Gruyere gratin. They're fantastic. In fact, one of our producers, Allison Poley, made two of them. She made the sweet potato and Gruyere gratin and the smoked braised kale with tomato. And I've got one plate here in front of me. It's amazing. I've eaten almost half of it.
Yeah.
So give us some of the skills we're going to need to make, whether it's your list here, your menu, or our own. Talk first about the turkey. Sam, in your book, you explore brine turkeys, butterfly turkeys, spit-roasted turkeys, deep-fat fried turkeys. What's your favorite way to cook a bird?
Oh, you know, the thing about turkeys is it's like fashion. It's like the width of a tie or the length of a skirt. It comes and goes, whether you're brining, not brining, frying, not frying, roasting, not roasting. I find that my favorite one is the one that I happen to be doing at the time. This year, I'm not brining and I'm roasting, but I'm making two birds, so I may have to, in order to maximize the kind of time-space continuum of my oven, I may have to spatchcock them and cook them flat and fast.
Mm. Here's Melissa Clark in a New York Times video explaining the best way to prepare your turkey for Thanksgiving dinner. Here she is.
You could really make yourself nuts with a Thanksgiving turkey. You could brine it a few days before, you could season it, you could smoke it, you could deep fry it, you could grill it. But you know what? No matter what you do, it's actually not going to taste that much better than if you just rub it down with salt and put it in the oven. Promise.
Promise. You know, that's the only way I ever, it's the only way I ever do it. Not because, you know, it's just the only way I know how to do it. So
I think that's how most people do it. And you know what? It's a really good method. Simpler sometimes is better. You know, the trick is you just don't want to overcook it, and getting the timing right and not worrying about, you know, making sure that the breast meat is still juicy and the dark meat is not completely raw. You know, that's the tricky part. And that's the part you have to just really watch and take the turkey's temperature and make sure that, you know, it's cooking well.
Let's underscore the take the turkey's temperature here, because I think it really is the easiest way to remove stress from the whole process of cooking. Invest in an instant read, maybe even oven safe digital thermometer, so you can keep track of what's going on deep within the breast of the turkey, deep within the thigh meat, and you can watch it closely as it inches upward toward where you want to end up, which is 165 degrees. But you don't want to cook it to 165 in the oven. You want to bring it out beforehand because, of course, it's going to continue to heat up while it rests. So 162.
155.
Yeah, because it'll come up a good 5 or even more degrees as it's resting.
And here's the thing. I always tell people, in fact, I just wrote this email today on the way here, err on the side of perfect white meat and slightly undercooked dark meat. Worst comes to worst, you throw the thighs back in the oven under the broiler for a minute or two while you carve up the breast, because there's no going back with the breast. Mm. Once that breast is overcooked, it is dry, it is dead, but you can fix the legs if you have to, right? Okay.
That's totally true.
Note to self, take the turkey's temperature.
Yes.
Sam,
yes.
You wrote, the first thing you ought to do on Thanksgiving morning is put that turkey neck in a pot with water and vegetables and let it go. Talk to us about turkey stock and the importance of that on Thanksgiving Day.
Well, that's the simplest possible stock you could make. It's just turkey neck broth, essentially. And you can use it for a myriad of reasons over the course of the day. You can add it to kind of freshen up your dressing after it's been sitting for a while. You can use it, obviously, in your gravy when you make the gravy. And here's a little tip Melissa and I have picked up over the years. If you have that turkey stock sitting on the oven at the very last minute, right before you serve, you've carved all that beautiful, perfectly cooked breast meat. You've made this beautiful platter of food. Take a ladle full of that stock and just drizzle it over that meat before you send it out, and it'll warm it up. It'll juicify it, to use a technical term. And people will be amazed. Wow, this meat is so moist and hot. How did that happen?
And carve the
no
turkey.
No need to tell them.
Carve the turkey in the kitchen, not at the table.
Absolutely.
Oh, always. That's another. Don't try to do that Norman Rockwell thing where you put the fork right into the whole bird. That's just a disaster.
No, it's truly a disaster. You do not want to be carving in that direction anyway. You want to take the breast off and then cut it against the grain. And it's best to do that in the privacy of your own kitchen.
Mm. Plus, then you get to nibble on the little, you know, bits of skin that fall off by accident, which are my favorite part.
Sam, you sent out a recipe this week, which, by the way, I religiously read your newsletter. I think it's just terrific. And this recipe is also in your Thanksgiving book about basic cranberry sauce. Talk to us about cranberry sauce. I confess to getting mine out of a can, and I'm ready for my chastening, but that's what I do.
No chastening.
Okay.
I'm not going to – there are no judgments on Thanksgiving. People who like canned cranberry sauce like canned cranberry sauce. And, you know, I'm always interested in – do you just kind of take it out of the can as if it were – dog food, or do you Or do you cut it into little coins?
No, I cut it into little coins.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Okay.
Anyway, I have no judgment about that, except that for me, I prefer the homemade variety without the high fructose corn syrup in it.
And
it
so tell us how to do it. Tell us how to do it.
It's ridiculously easy to do. You take the berries, you add a liquid, which could be orange juice in my case, or it could be red wine. Melissa has a beautiful recipe with red wine in it, and sugar to offset the tartness of the berries. And then you let that liquid come to a boil, a simmer, and it will begin to burst the berries. And that's important because the berries will release pectin, and the pectin is the gel essentially that will allow it to come together. I get panicked emails and tweets on Thanksgiving all the time about, like, why isn't my cranberry sauce setting? And the reason is you haven't cooked it enough to get those berries to burst and to release the pectin that's required to have it gel.
Mm. All right, Melissa, tell us about gravy. What's your secret to a great gravy?
You know, Sam and I differ on this a little bit, too. I like to do my gravy ahead. I really like a make-ahead gravy. I'm very stressed out on Thanksgiving. I don't want to – I'm pretty much the main cook. So I'm carving and I'm trying to make the gravy at the same time. And that's – for a lot of people, that's just too hard. For me, it's too hard. So I make my gravy ahead. I have a recipe actually at NYT Cooking. It's make-ahead gravy. It's really simple. The trick is you use a delicious stock, either bought or homemade, and you make a roux and you get the roux nice, you know, you flour butter, you get it nice and brown so it has a rich flavor. And then the secret is at the end, instead of wasting those turkey drippings, you just scoop them up right from the pan and you throw them into your gravy. So you have the best of both worlds.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're discussing the big Thanksgiving meal this hour. While you still have time to plan the menu and you can join the conversation, what's your favorite old family recipe? Your greatest Thanksgiving tradition? Your biggest disaster? My guests today, Sam Sifton and Melissa Clark of the New York Times food section. Sam is the food editor of the New York Times and the founding editor of the New York Times cooking newsletter. Melissa Clark is staff reporter for the New York Times food section and author of the column A Good Appetite. Last year, Sam Sifton visited comedy duo Desus Nice and the kid Miro on their late night show on Vice. They talked about cranberry sauce. Sam said he's okay with canned cranberry sauce as long as it's prepared a certain way.
I respect the sliced one. And if I were to get like a Thanksgiving on a roll thing in a deli,
right.
I love the slice on there. Here's the thing, though. I beg of you, if you're going to use the can, slice. Because with the mashing, it's like dog food.
And in this video posted to YouTube, a family in Ohio tries to deep fry a turkey. As they gather around the deep fryer in the backyard, things start to go haywire.
Here we go. This is the biggest turkey ever deep fried in Ohio.
Yeah. This is going to hit YouTube for the biggest explosion in Inglewood.
It's on fire. Dude, it's on fire. Drew, it's on fire.
Where?
On the bottom.
Jesus. Who measured the oil?
I'll give you one guess.
Who measured the oil? Oh, it's on fire. Oh, goodness. All right. Dave is in Buffalo. Let's get to him. Hi, Dave. Welcome to On Point with Sam Sifton and Melissa Clark.
Hi, Jane. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I love Thanksgiving. It's my favorite holiday. I'm so excited. We're hosting for the first time in 10 years. But on NPR this weekend, they mentioned the influence of Native American foods on the first Thanksgiving. So I'd like to try a lobster cornbread kind of oyster stuffing. Mm. And I don't know if that's a great original idea or if it's been done 1,000 times. And do you have any ideas?
Mm. Dave, sounds good.
It does sound good. I'd pull that lobster out of that dressing, though. I think, you know, an oyster dressing is a delicious thing. We have a recipe for it on nytcooking.com. We also have a nice – this is not at all of the Native American tradition, but we have a nice lobster mac and cheese if you do want to get some lobster into your feast. But absolutely, cornbread, some oysters would be good. We've got a nice clam and chorizo one at nytcooking.com that also would suffice, I think.
So, Sam, are you a traditionalist, a purist when it comes to Thanksgiving, the meal itself?
Jane, I've been doing this a long time.
I know, that's why I ask.
So sometimes I am a traditionalist.
Yeah.
I advocate the tradition of making it as your family makes it. Families change, of course, as people fall in love and families blend. And when families blend, new tastes come into the Thanksgiving larder, and that's a great and marvelous thing. So if you have, you know, as I do, a basic turkey right at the center, you can kind of build out from there. I still make my father's Brussels sprouts every year, but I might try a new side dish based on the experience of one of the guests who's a new guest or someone's new girlfriend or boyfriend or the like, and that's exciting too.
Mm. Melissa talked about dressing and stuffing. Dressing versus stuffing. What's the difference? What's best? What's your recommendation?
Well, stuffing is the breadcrumb mixture and the eggs and the seasonings actually stuffed into the turkey cavity and roasted along with the turkey. And dressing is that same mixture baked in a casserole dish next to the turkey. And with the dressing, you get the advantage of the crispy top, which is just so marvelous. And you also don't have to worry. You know, there's some stress about cooking the stuffing in the turkey because it has eggs in it. And the stuffing has to also reach 165 degrees for it to be safe.
Right.
And the turkey has to reach 165. But they don't reach that 165 at the same time. And that is that is what is going to dry out your turkey because it takes longer for the stuffing to get up to 165. So if you must bake your stuffing in the turkey, if you really want to get all those drippings, as soon as that breast meat is done, take your turkey out. Take the stuffing out of the turkey. Just scoop it out with a big spoon. It's going to be hot, so be careful. Put it in a casserole dish and finish cooking it. However, I have given up on stuffing. I do dressing every year. Mm. What about you, Sam? Do you dressing too?
I completely agree. Mm. I mean, if you think about even a really big turkey, there's not a lot of room in that cavity.
Right.
So you have a 22-pound bird, you're not going to get that much stuffing relative to how much you could get into, say, a 9-by-13-inch baking dish. Mm-hmm. So I, too, much prefer cooking it as dressing outside of the bird.
And another thing about it, stuffing your turkey will actually slow down the cooking of the turkey itself.
Oh, really?
Because, because, you know, that cavity in there, you're basically insulating the turkey from the heat. You know, you've got this stuff in there. If you leave that cavity open, heat can enter into it and can help cook the bird more quickly. Mm. So a lot of times you'll see timings for stuffed and unstuffed turkeys, and that's the reason why.
You two have an ongoing debate about whether there should be salad on the Thanksgiving table. Tell us about your argument.
I'm not sure it's really a debate. It's just a point of view. And in my point of view, there's no room for salad at the Thanksgiving table.
I'm with you, Sam. I actually agree.
Really? Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Okay. Well, your producer, Allison, agreed with me. So, I think that salad is refreshing. It is something I always want on my table. I mean, there's a lot of carbohydrates going on Thanksgiving. You know, you've got the stuffing and the potatoes and the rich gravy. I think salad just adds a crisp bite. You can do salads that you can make ahead, so you don't have to be fiddling with tossing anything at the last minute. It adds freshness.
You know what's fresh and crisp? The cool fall air that I feel on my face when I take a walk after I eat my carbohydrate-rich meal.
Well, good for you, Sam.
And on it goes.
I want my salad also.
Here's Ed in Owensboro, Kentucky. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the program with Sam Sifton and Melissa Clark.
Hi, Jen.
Hi. Go ahead.
Appreciate taking the call.
You bet.
You guys got me so hungry now listening to the show. Great show, by the way. But hey, real quick question. I'm a cook in the house, but we always go to a traditional Thanksgiving dinner at my mother-in-law's house where everybody's supposed to bring a side dish, and everything's so very traditional. Each year I try to bring something new that everybody would like, and maybe they've never had before or thought about. So that's my question. Will it be something really good and exciting that's non-traditional but has that same, I don't want to say complement it with the flavors that they have, but that's my question.
Mm-hmm. All right, Ed, thank you.
I think, you know, squash, I think, is a good one. You know, you always want something orange on the table. And normally we have sweet potatoes, right? Sweet potatoes is our go-to Thanksgiving side dish. But winter squash, it's the same kind of, you know, it has the same flavors. It's really easy to make in advance. Any winter squash you could treat the same way. We have tons of recipes at NYT Cooking, but basically you can just, you know, take your squash, slice it up, throw it in the oven with some olive oil, salt, and pepper, let it roast, and then when you get you bring it to your Thanksgiving, and then when you get there, you can toss it with anything you want, pecans or pomegranate seeds or dried cranberries. You can make it really fancy, and it's super autumnal.
Ed, thanks so much for the call. Speaking of squash, Melissa, you tested 9 varieties of squash to find the best way to make pumpkin pie from scratch. Here's that.
I did a sugar pumpkin, a little bit stringy. Kabocha, too earthy. Carnival squash, tough, took forever to cook. Blue Hubbard, watery. Delicata, bland. Cheese pumpkin, granular. I didn't test the crookneck pumpkin because it was too pretty to cut. And so what's the best? Butternut squash. Sweet, tender, easy to handle. You can peel it with a vegetable peeler, makes a gorgeous puree.
Ah, butternut squash, the lesson there.
I stand by that. It's funny, you know, I did a cheese pumpkin the other day just for dinner. I just cut it up and roasted it, and I was, you know, tasting it and thinking, oh, well, if there's some leftovers, I'll throw it into the pumpkin pie. And as I was, you know, tasting it, I was like, you know what? No, no, the butternut squash is just the best. Acorn squash is a close second. But, you know, in canned pumpkin that we buy, there's actually a very high proportion of butternut squash in that. So that's the flavor we're used to already, and you might as well make it fresh because it's so easy. If you roast it, it also dries the flesh out a little bit. It concentrates the flavor, and it makes it very velvety.
Sam, what about pies? In our house, we have one pumpkin, one pecan. Where are you guys? What do you do?
One pumpkin, one pecan, one apple. Repeat.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
Yeah, we always add the apple.
Where's the chocolate? Don't you need? I believe in chocolate.
Here we go again. Here we go again with the crazy ideas.
Salad and chocolate.
Salad and chocolate. What
I
know, is
I'm
next?
Such a renegade.
What is this world coming to? Oh, there are 364 days in the year when you can have chocolate for dessert. On this day, we do not.
Cube up some chocolate, chop up some chocolate, bittersweet chocolate, throw it into your pecan pie. It is so good. And plus, pecan pie is really sweet. Bittersweet chocolate in your pecan pie makes it slightly less sweet, and chocolate.
A twist. All right. Here's Ashton in Homer, Arkansas. Hi, Ashton. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. It's hi. Alaska, actually.
Oh, hi, Ashton. Great to have you.
Yeah, thanks. I'm just wondering about how to prepare a turkey for smoking. Every year we have our friends over and try to spend most of the day outside. Last year we covered the turkey in clay and buried it in coals. And this year we want to smoke it. But though we know how to smoke meat, we don't really know the best way to prepare it, whether we should stuff it, how early we should start. And so I wondered if you had some advice on that.
Okay, great.
Okay,
Ashton.
I have tons of advice on that. Right, first of all, do not stuff it. Because as we were saying earlier in the program, you know, we don't really like how that leads to longer cooking times and not enough dressing to eat. And if you're smoking, the stuffing acts essentially as a filter does on a cigarette and just pulls all that smoke in, and it just don't stuff it. How long it's going to take is going to depend a great deal on the ambient temperature. You're in Alaska. It's getting chilly. I know they had their first snow in Anchorage just the other day. So it's going to be cold out. It's going to take a little bit longer than it would in Arkansas to go. You're going to want an inside temperature inside the smoker of around like 220, 230, something like that. And depending on the size of the bird and your trusty digital thermometer, you ought to be able to get done in 6 to 8 hours.
Hmm. Ashton, thanks so much for the call. All right, I've got three quick questions for Sam Sifton, Melissa Clark. Will you guys give me three quick answers? Your go-to save-the-day ingredient on Thanksgiving?
Butter.
That's easy.
Yeah, pretty much garlic.
Garlic. Ah, okay.
No, he's making faces at me.
All right, your best cheat ingredient?
Wondra flour, an instant flour. That is to say, a really kind of finely milled flour that does not clump when you add it to your gravy. It's a real game changer.
Mm. I would have to say, if you haven't made that turkey stock, just purchase chicken stock.
Mm. All right, your biggest flop on Thanksgiving, worst thing you've ever made?
Pumpkin cheesecake.
Ah.
It's just I failed on a pumpkin cheesecake
really?
Once. It just never, you know, it never.
She's human, folks.
It just never never set up, and it was not nearly as good as pumpkin. It was the sad little dessert left all by itself at the end, kind of runny. I'm never going to do it again. I'm done with pumpkin cheesecake.
Sam, do you have an admission?
I do. I brined the first turkey I ever fried, and that was a gigantic error because all the moisture in the breasts turned to steam in the hot oil and exploded the breasts off the bird.
Oh, that's dramatic.
It was a real hold my beer moment.
All right, time for Molly in Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Molly. You're on the air with Sam Sifton and Melissa Clark from The New York Times.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I was just talking with some mom friends of mine and sharing family recipes, and it occurred to me that one of the things that my mom has taught me is adding some alcohol and different types of flavored alcohol to some of the classic dishes makes for a really nice twist. So over our sweet potatoes, she does cognac pecans, which are incredibly delicious with brown sugar and butter and a little bit of cognac, and it's incredible. And she also makes a twist on the classic joy of baking pound cake. She adds a Grand Marnier glaze and a little bit of orange rind and zest into the batter itself. And it just really makes those dishes that are a little bit more traditional things.
Molly, thank you. Thanks for the call. Let's get Jason in here from Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Jason. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
So I was calling about family traditions and some of the fun things that we kind of do. In our house, it's sausage balls. So every year, it was done before me. I have an uncle-in-law who was a force recon guy from the Marines, and he went ahead and always had the tradition of making them. So it got passed down to me as a fun thing to do. It's kind of easy because all the ingredients are kind of sausage balls. You just throw in all the normal stuffing ingredients and then squish it up and throw it in the oven. Mm. So
sounds great.
A fun thing.
Sounds fun. I'm glad to hear it. And thanks for calling, Jason. Thank you. Let's get one more in here. Leslie in Rochester, New York. Hi, Leslie. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling about a riddle. We have a family recipe that has come down. I'm 68 years old, and it came down from my grandparents. So the story is it's a war recipe called soldier duff pudding.
Soldier dust pudding, okay.
Soldier duff. And the truth is that nobody I've ever met but my family like it. In fact, spouses don't generally care for it, but anybody that's come down through that branch of the family loves it. So that's a family test we use. I'd like to know if this recipe, if anybody knows anything about it, because we've never talked to anybody that knows about it.
All right, Leslie, if anybody would, it'd be Sam or Melissa. Soldier dust pudding.
Duff pudding, I think. But what's in it?
Leslie, are you still there? I think she's gone.
You know, there's prune duff. I mean, there's a classic prune duff recipe, which was also wartime. It was basically like a prune mousse. You would soak prunes and you'd puree them with egg whites. And it is actually a delicious thing. If prunes are really sweet, the egg whites make it fluffy. I think it's a great thing. I don't know if soldier duff is the same, but a duff generally is some kind of whipped pudding type thing.
Leslie, thanks. We'll talk more about traditions after the break. But before we go to break here, Sam, you have manned the Thanksgiving hotline at the New York Times Cooking for a couple of years now. Does the hotline still exist? And how's that going?
Well, it exists in the world of social media. You can at me on Twitter and I'll see if I can help you out. @SamSifton.
And your craziest hotline conundrum, what's it been?
I talked to some people in Mumbai who were taking a turkey that they had somehow gotten to India to the local tandoor shop, and they wanted instruction. And I said, tell the tandoor guys it's just a big chicken. And it worked out for them.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about holiday cooking this hour, Thanksgiving cooking with Sam Sifton and Melissa Clark from The New York Times. You can join the conversation. Are you inspired now to try something new after listening? Just a few minutes left. What's your pressing question for Melissa and Sam? My guest this hour, Sam Sifton, Melissa Clark. Sam is the food editor for The New York Times. He wrote a book on Thanksgiving called Thanksgiving, How to Cook It Well. Melissa is a staff reporter for The New York Times food section. She's the author of 39 cookbooks, and her latest is Dinner in an Instant. Here's a clip from the 1973 classic, A Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. Peppermint Patty invites herself and her friends over to Charlie Brown's for Thanksgiving. Snoopy prepares buttered toast and ice cream sundaes, and after they gather around the ping pong table, Linus says grace.
In the year 1621, the Pilgrims held their first Thanksgiving feast. They invited the great Indian chief, Massasoit, who brought 90 of his brave Indians and a great abundance of food. Governor William Bradford and Captain Miles Standish were honored guests. Elder William Brewster, who was a minister, said a prayer that went something like this. We thank God for our homes and our food and our safety in a new land. We thank God for the opportunity to create a new world with freedom and justice.
Amen.
From the dream to the sometimes reality now, in this video posted to YouTube, a family in Sarasota, Florida struggles to contain an oven fire on Thanksgiving. Here is some of that chaos. Oh dear, what's a Thanksgiving without a turkey fire in the oven? Here's Victoria in Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Victoria. You're on the air with Sam Sifton and Melissa Clark.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, what would be a good side dish that would be food allergy friendly? We're going to my sister-in-law's for Thanksgiving, and she told us to bring a side dish for my toddler since she has a lot of food allergies. And now that she's eating a lot more food, I was just wondering what would be a good dish to bring that everyone could enjoy.
Good question, Victoria. Thank you. Sam, Melissa?
I would say, rice is a really safe bet. So for Thanksgiving, if you want to make it special and you don't think it's going to be too much for a toddler, I would say wild rice. It's festive. It's autumnal. It's special. It's a little expensive, but you can mix it, cut it with regular rice or brown rice. And we have a recipe at NYT Cooking that is a wild rice casserole with white beans, and it has lots of things in it. It has garlic and it has mushrooms. You can simplify it, but something even simpler would just be a pilaf, like a lovely rice pilaf. Mm-hmm. Rice is very allergen-friendly in general.
And what's great about that wild rice is it provides the kind of nutty flavor that you can't use nuts in an allergic environment. So it's a nice thing to do.
Victoria, thanks for the call. Victoria brings up the accommodations that we sometimes need to make in the world of food allergies. But, also with the vegetarians and the vegans out there, there's bacon in the Brussels sprouts and chicken stock lurking in the dressing and, of course, butter in everything. Sam Sifton, beyond the tofu turkey, what's a chef to do?
Well, I think if you go hard at vegetables and nuts, you can do quite well. I, for a time, really loved a recipe that is on NYT Cooking called Really Big Beets, where you just essentially serve a really big beet. And it's great, but there's not a ton of protein there. And so I've moved for vegan and gluten-free guests toward stuffing delicata squash and using, as Melissa said earlier, wild rice. But wild rice mixed with nuts and berries and the like. It's beautiful. It's festive looking. It's packed with protein and happens to be really delicious.
Mm. So it's not just about family on Thanksgiving. Many people especially celebrate, especially young people, as I've been hearing on our staff today, celebrate Friendsgiving. A couple of, you know, lots of friends get together and they have sort of a Friendsgiving meal before their family events. What's your recommendation for going to a potluck sort of activity like this? What's the best thing to bring? What do you recommend? Melissa?
Well, with any potluck, you always want to check in with your host and see what they want you to bring in, because otherwise you're going to end up with five, you know, dishes of dressing and nobody will have brought the sweet potatoes. So you just want to make sure that somebody's organizing it. I like Google spreadsheets for that kind of thing, or just those online kind of sign-up sheets so that people can claim their favorites. And then, you know, since it's your friends, since you can be a little crazy, don't stick to the traditional stuff if you know that's what you're going to eat for Thanksgiving with your family. This is a time to go wild, you know. If you want, like, you want to make those green beans with ginger and chili and garlic and, you know, something really funky, do that for Friendsgiving, because, you know your friends, you know their tastes, you know that that's where it's going to be welcome.
All right, let's get to Nancy in Phoenix City, Alabama. Hi, Nancy. You're on the air.
Hello, Jane. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
We are actually having a Friendsgiving this year, and in lieu of the green bean casserole, we're doing charred asparagus salad. But my question, Jane, for your guests, Sam and Melissa, we are going to do a ham on the grill. We've never done it. We have a grill that has a smoker side, and as a glaze, we're using bourbon and honey and, apple cider vinegar, brown sugar. But we would like to know, my husband and I, please, when using the smoker, the timing, and the ham is between 12 and 14 pounds, because we're having a lot of friends over.
All right, Nancy, thank you. Ham on the grill.
So, ham on the grill is a great idea, and putting it in the smoker, which will essentially double smoke it, is a good idea. But remember, it's probably, you know, it's a ready-to-eat ham. What you're doing is heating it through and getting that glaze to kind of melt and glaze and adhere to the meat. So I think what you're going to want to do is cut a crosshatch pattern, essentially diamond pattern, into the skin of the ham. Get that glaze on there. Put it on the smoker side of the grill, but run it a little bit hotter than you would if you were, say, cooking a brisket or a side of ribs, because what you want to do is heat the thing through and get that glaze to crisp up, in a sense, on the exterior. So probably around 300, 325 on the smoker side, and you'll probably be done in the neighborhood of an hour, hour and 15 minutes.
Good question, Nancy. Good luck to you. Let's get Van in here from Nashville. Hi, Van. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just calling to say my family did not have a sit-down Thanksgiving dinner. My grandmother raised turkeys and sold them to the stores and sold them to other people, but what we did on Thanksgiving was kill hogs. Mm. It was a working day to kill hogs and put them in the smokehouse so we could have country ham for Christmas and for Easter and throughout the whole year.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
great tradition.
I could see after raising turkeys that you maybe didn't want to do the Thanksgiving.
Melissa and I are going to Chinese food.
In our dreams.
So there's Van's family tradition. What are some of your family traditions, Sam Sifton?
We take, as I alluded to earlier, we take a long, long walk after the meal, but before dessert, before the pies. And that kind of slow amble through the neighborhood with dogs and children and everybody gambling around. And, you know, there's a guy actually smoking a cheroot. Like, when do you see that? Like, that's, Uncle
often.
Marty smoking a cheroot. It's just terrific. And lots of good conversation, the crisp air. It's really a pleasant, pleasant part of the meal that kind of gets our appetite going again for the big rush to pie.
Melissa?
In our family, so we live about 15 minutes from my parents' house, and I like to do all the cooking over there. So we definitely – we try to do either spatchcocking or we'll do two small birds so that we can get it done in, 4 hours or so. But one of the things we do before we go over is there's a turkey trot in Prospect Park, and my husband usually runs it. And this year I think my – daughter and I, she's nine, I think we're going to try to do it together. We're going to kind of walk, run it. It's 5 miles. And it's just, it's, you know, you get out there, you get the fresh air, you get it first thing in the morning. It's such a festive thing. Everyone's wearing really funny hats, and it's just a lot of fun.
Oh, that's great. Well, we go to Florida every Thanksgiving to see my now 90-year-old mother-in-law, and I cook in the pans my husband ate off when he was a child in this 50-year-old oven and stove that I never know if it's going to give out right in the middle of it all. And it's so interesting that I'm making the same meal my mom cooked for me as a child, and I'm making it for my kids in my mother-in-law's kitchen. So
that's great.
That's family. That's really nice.
Here's Alex in Rockport, Massachusetts. Hi, Alex. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane. I was just wondering, because speaking of tradition, my family makes a cardamom bread called miso bread every Christmas. And I was wondering if Thanksgiving would be too early to bring it out as a dessert.
Hmm. Ooh, tell us more about it.
It's just I really don't know that much about it. I was told it was a Finnish or a Swedish bread that the block cutters brought over with them when they moved into Rockport. It's pretty sweet.
That sounds
everyone
great.
Likes it.
That sounds great, and it's your Christmas tradition, and I don't understand why you're trying to bring it into Thanksgiving. One of the things – I was just in Los Angeles, and there were Christmas decorations everywhere. We're not even at Thanksgiving yet. Let's keep Christmas where Christmas is. Stay in our lanes. That said, that does sound like a delicious dessert, and if you want to bring it out, you really ought to.
I would eat it if it came out on my table.
Alex, thanks so much for the call. Melissa, I have to ask you about your new book. You've written another one, 39 Cookbooks Amazing, this one on Instant Pots. It's a beautiful one. I'm looking at it here. Give me the pitch. I love my slow cooker. I love my Dutch oven. Make the case for the Instant Pot.
Well, I mean, a slow cooker is great if you want to put something in it and then, you know, plug it in and walk away and have dinner 12 hours later. You can do the same thing with the Instant Pot, except you'll have your dinner 20 minutes later. You know, why cook slow when you can cook fast? It's the same convenience, you know, the same. You just plug it in, you walk away. Plus, the greatest thing about the electric pressure cooker is that it's completely safe. You know, we're a nation of being afraid of pressure cookers. We're afraid it's going to explode. And the electric pressure cooker has all these safety features on it. So you really can, you know, walk away just like you would your slow cooker.
Here you are in the New York Times video, one of them, preparing barbecue pork with a spicy barbecue Korean sauce. This is Melissa Clark talking about the convenience of the electric pressure cooker.
What I love about this electric pressure cooker is that instead of the normal 5 to 7 hours the pork would take in the slow cooker, it's going to take 90 minutes, which is, you know, a lot faster. I still love you, slow cooker. I'm just going to use you for other things.
So can you do a turkey in it, Melissa?
You know, you can't. I mean, you can, but you just, that is one, that's where I'm with Sam. I mean, there's certain, you know, there's certain traditions you just don't want to, you don't want to overstep the bounds. The problem with the electric pressure cooker and a turkey or any poultry is that, you know, the problem of getting the white meat and the dark meat cooked at the same time, it exacerbates it in the pressure cooker because just because it speeds everything up, the white meat cooks so quickly, the dark meat takes a little bit longer. And in those few extra minutes, the white meat will dry out. You need to cook white and dark meat separately. However, if you want to braise turkey legs, and braised turkey legs are delicious, and you do that in either your slow cooker or your electric pressure cooker, it's fantastic, and it will take 15 minutes.
I'll tell you what I would do. I would take 4 turkey thighs stacked on top of each other in that electric pressure cooker and zap it for 16 or 17 minutes,
exactly.
Something like that, and then shred it for a mole, a turkey mole.
Oh, throw some chipotle in there.
We're cooking now.
That's good. All right, tell me your recommendations for setting the Thanksgiving table, for serving the big feast. What should we know?
Okay. Well, first of all, we've established we're going to carve in the kitchen. There's going to be no food preparation at the table. You're going to want to have multiple tureens of gravy and cranberry sauce so that there's not too much passing of those condiments around. And if you are going to decorate the table, it is, after all, decorative gourd season, keep everything low, candles low, flowers low. You want to maintain the sight lines between your guests so that everyone can see one another and enjoy the conversation.
What time should we eat?
That's up to your family tradition. I like, as I say, I like that walk. And if I can time that walk with sunset, that would be great. So I would try and eat around 3:30 or 4. But sometimes we eat at 5 and sometimes we eat at 3. I'm not I'd hate to be that guy who really feels like every year we're going to hit that 2 o'clock mark. But I've been part of that family, so I know what it's like.
So, Melissa Clark, what should we be making in advance? Here we are 3 days out. What can we be doing now, set aside to sort of prepare for the big feast?
Well, if you're going to do a make-ahead gravy, you can do it today. I recommend doing that. It saves you a lot of work on Thanksgiving. Cranberry sauce, you can do that today for sure. You can make your pie crusts. If you're making pie crusts from scratch, and I really recommend you give it a go, because even a not like an imperfect homemade pie crust is so much better than anything you can buy. So try it this year. We can help you out at NYT Cooking. We have some videos of exactly what the pie dough should look like. But you put that in your fridge. You don't need to freeze it because it's only a few days out. You can actually even start, you know, if you're going to do like a pecan pie, you can start, you toast your nuts, you get those all ready. You can get your stuffing ingredients sort of prepped out. You know, now is when you want to start drying out your bread. Now is when my mother does this. She starts sauteing everything a few days ahead. Like she'll saute the base, you know, get the onion and the fennel or the garlic, whatever you're using, mushrooms, put that in the fridge. You know, don't combine it until Thanksgiving. And you got to make your stock.
Mm. And the glue of the meal is the cranberry sauce and the gravy, Sam.
I believe so. I think that both of those things cover a myriad of sins. If you accidentally overcook that turkey breast, the gravy's going to help. If you kind of undercook something, you can blast it, and then it got a little burnt. Uh-oh, put some cranberry sauce on top of it. It's like foundation.
Well, thank you very much. I have to say your recipes have created many warm and lasting memories at our house and not just at Thanksgiving. So I'm going to go out here with your smoky braised kale with tomato that's in front of me and say thank you to Sam Sifton and Melissa Clark from the New York Times cooking site. Thanks to you both very much.
Thanks for having us.
Happy Thanksgiving. You can continue the conversation, listeners, and get the Odd Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Let's turkey trot. Let's shoot. Let's shoot.